Now, you're welcome back to Taking Stock. I'm Emmet Oliver in for Mandy Johnson this morning. Now it's time for this.
Techscape on Taking Stock. Brought to you by PwC. Our industry experts can help you unlock the full potential of AI to transform your business safely and responsibly. Visit pwc.ie to learn more.
Now, this next story reads like a horror story mixed with a little bit of science fiction. If you were a country, imagine how powerful you could be if you were able to make and manufacture rain. Yes, you've heard that right. This is what the United Arab Emirates is attempting to do. And my next guest travelled there to witness some of the ways that they are attempting to do it. And it's great to welcome Amit Karwala, who is a writer and editor at Wired, to Taking Stock. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Now, the amazing thing about, we know how dry this part of the world is, Amit. We know it's very, very arid. We know the climate there is very different to us here in Europe. And I'm sure there's upsides to that. And then there are certain downsides. But before we get into what they're trying to do, just explain a little bit about the technology to me and what exactly is cloud seeding.
So cloud seeding tries to basically extract more rain from the atmosphere. So a problem that they have in the UAE and other arid areas is that there's lots of, well, there's some water vapor in the sky, but it's not, the droplets aren't big enough for them to actually fall as rain. So it's not enough to have water in the sky. It actually has to coalesce into droplets that are big enough, heavy enough to fall as rain. So what cloud seeding tries to do is make those water droplets stick together by spraying chemicals or salt or other particles into the sky to attract water vapor in the hope that it then makes the water heavy enough so that it falls to the ground as rain.
Now, when I hear something like spraying something into the atmosphere, obviously the distances and size and scale of all of this must be massive. So is this a huge resource that they need to have to sort of stimulate this rain?
So the way they do it at the moment is they send up planes. So they have a fleet of planes that they will then send up. So they kind of have a team of people that will scour the radar maps looking for clouds that are suitable for seeding. And then when they find one of those clouds, they'll scramble one of their pilots in one of these planes, and they'll fly the pilot will fly up to the base of the cloud, and then on the wings of their planes there are flares attached which will release salt crystals into the base of the cloud when they're ignited. So each flight costs about $8,000. They're doing maybe 100 flights a year. So it's not insanely expensive in the grand scheme of things when you consider some of the other things that have been funded in the UAE.
I was about to say, is this per drop, you know, was what I was thinking when you said that.
Yeah,
can I just ask you,
$8,000 per flight, so you can maybe get three or four clouds on that flight.
In terms of this technology itself, obviously you've explained it very well and very simply. Is this sort of in any way a piece of technology that's in any way accredited, or is it signed off or sanctioned? Is there a global scientific body that agrees with this, or is this just something that the UAE and other countries in the region are doing? I'm just trying to get an idea of the status of the technology itself.
Yeah, so it's actually been around for quite a long time. So it was first developed in the 1940s and 1950s in the United States at General Electric, and they kind of dabbled with it for a while, and it kind of fell out of favor because they couldn't really prove that it worked. And then what's happened in the last 20 years is that computer modeling has gotten a lot better and our understanding of cloud physics has gotten a lot better. So now they're trying to, that's led to a revival of this cloud seeding technology. And now they're trying to prove that, yes, it actually does work. I think until recently, it's been considered something of a pseudoscience. And the jury is still out to a certain extent on whether or not it's really going to be a practical way of making rain. But I think what's changing is that people are kind of getting desperate. Countries are getting desperate. You know, they're willing to try anything because of droughts getting worse.
Sure. And when you went there on your visit, I mean, just give us an idea of what you saw yourself with your own naked eyes. What, like, was there much rain? Did it take a while to happen? Just give us an idea of what you saw yourself.
Also, when I went there, it didn't actually rain at all. And in fact, there weren't even that many clouds for them to seed, which is the other problem, right? You can only seed clouds that are actually there. So, you know, even if the UAE managed to,
I could just picture you ringing your editor saying, it's gone well this trip, I just haven't seen any rain. But
well, ironically, a few months after I got back, they had those massive floods, do you remember?
Yes.
In Dubai. And I was like, I really picked the wrong week to travel, or the right week, if you think about it from a practical point of view. But I guess the key point is that, you know, this isn't a technology that's going to turn blue skies into, you know, buckets of rain. It's a technology where you can maybe squeeze 10% more rain out of the clouds that are already there. But if the clouds aren't there, then there's never going to be anything for you to squeeze that rain out of.
Right. So in other words, this technology will work. It's more about, you know, the yield per the effort and all the rest of it. Like, is it worth the effort is almost where the debate is. Is that
fair? Yeah, and I think there are kind of more practical ways of getting fresh water. And the UAE and other countries in the Middle East spend a lot of money on desalination, which is maybe slightly more expensive per litre than cloud seeding, but it's a lot more reliable. Like, you can guarantee that if you, you know, take a litre of seawater and take the salt out of it, you will have, you know, almost a litre of fresh water at the end of it. Whereas with cloud seeding, it's much more fluffy, I guess, nebulous whether or not it's actually going to work.
Now, you took an actual cloud seeding flight run. Just walk us through what was involved in that.
Yeah, so I got an Uber to a military base in the desert.
Wired. This is where I need to go. I need to get myself a staff job at Wired, right?
Yeah, and then I went through like security, passed some guys with guns, and then I got into a small propeller plane, feeling slightly nervous at that point, with a very friendly South African pilot who then flew me up and kind of showed me like what would happen on a cloud seeding mission. So as I said, there weren't that many clouds around.
This is what would have happened if it was successful.
if there'd been more clouds. So what we did was we kind of simulated what would have happened if there had actually been enough clouds for us to see. But anyway, he took me up and we flew around kind of hunting for clouds for a while. And then we triggered the flares. So there's two different types of flares. So there's one flare that just releases salt crystals. And then there's a new flare that is developed in the UAE, which uses nano crystals. So these are salt crystals coated in other substances that make them more sticky, basically make water stick to them more easily. That was basically what I did. And in theory, the pilot told me that he's, you know, seen instances where he's gone up and seeded a cloud. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, it started raining. But obviously, that's not science, right? You know, kind of have to like.
And as he leaned over to you and said, "Just not today."
Exactly. Yeah, so it was all sort of. It was a very interesting experience, and I think the takeaway that I took from it was that I think the UAE wants to be seen to be able to do these things. You know, it wants to be seen to be a technological superpower, and that's one of the reasons why it's investing so much money in cloud seeding when maybe desalination, taking salt out of seawater, which is maybe slightly more boring, perhaps isn't going to grab as many headlines.
And did you get a sense from talking to people there that the cloud seeding is, as you say, kind of optics to some degree, and that the bigger yields of water for the future will be the desalinations or maybe piping water from other areas or something like is that sort of what the real work is? And this is sort of a little bit for the cameras and maybe even Wired magazine.
Yeah, a little bit. And I think they have invested a lot of money in research. That's the other interesting thing about the UAE, and the reason I wanted to go there specifically is that they've invested like tens of millions of dollars in trying to sort of advance the science of rain enhancement. So the flight that I just described, that's the way that cloud seeding has kind of been done since it was invented in the 1940s. But what they've started doing in the UAE is investing in things like drones and lasers and things like that, which are kind of new technologies which they hope can make it rain. So they're developing, you know,
do you know any more about when I hear the word laser, I get nervous. Do you know much more about that part?
So actually, after I went on the cloud seeding flight, I got a lift to another military base where they took my phone away, maybe put it in a locker, and I wasn't allowed to record anything or take any photos. This is like super top secret stuff. Again, it's feeling slightly nervous at this point. They took my passport off me as well, I think, actually. I was feeling slightly nervous at that point. So they basically have this laser, ground-based laser that they shoot into the sky, and it turns the sky to plasma.
That doesn't sound good on the surface, way you were briefly describing it there.
Yeah, so basically what it was, so they showed me like a miniature version of it, and it was like a kind of very fine laser beam that was invisible, and then they focused it, and a very small piece of the air kind of, it looked like a bit like a web of... like you see a spider web like caught in a beam of light or whatever. It looked a bit like that, but it was bright blue, and there was this really loud buzzing noise, and this tiny bit of the air turned bright blue like lightning. And basically what they'd done is they'd focused this laser so powerfully that it set that small piece of the air on fire.
Some of this is sounding a bit Timothy Leary, sort of hallucinogenic. In terms of them doing all these things, lasers and shooting all sorts of things at sky and turning plasma as you describe it, did you get any sense that this has been run by the scientists, or is this being run by the military, or is this being run by the politicians? Like, who's driving all these sort of semi-dystopian sort of images that you're creating here? Like, who was kind of running the show here when you were walking around the place?
Yeah, so the work's being done by scientists. The funding comes from the government. A lot of the work is kind of military adjacent. So I didn't get the sense that the military were particularly involved, or I think there are probably military applications for a lot of this technology.
I suppose that would be the worry. Could all this stuff be weaponized in what's already a fairly fertile region? The idea of throwing a few extra lasers into the mix just makes me a bit spooked.
Yeah, and there's a long history of, during the Vietnam War, the US used cloud seeding to try and basically make the Ho Chi Minh Trail like soggy so that it would be harder for, the enemy combatants to traverse it. There was a UN kind of treaty on weather modification in the 1970s that said, don't modify the weather for warfare, basically. But it's not so much, it's even, even if they can't actually make it rain, I think the perception that they could make it rain is also dangerous in and of itself. There was a story from a few years ago where an Iranian general kind of started accusing countries like the UAE and Israel of stealing Iran's rain. And you can see how something like that, even if
they can have ours here in Ireland, where we have a surplus,
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, maybe that is a solution to this problem.
and all jokes aside, I mean, it's just give people an idea who a lot of our listeners have been in this region, but a lot wouldn't have, just how dry it is and how urgent the need is. I mean, this is what's sort of propelling them into doing what we might see as slightly eccentric technologies. But just give us an idea of how dry it is and how bad climate change is impacting on this area.
Yeah, so the UAE is obviously naturally very dry, one of the driest places on Earth. And what's happened there in particular is that the population's increased and the water consumption has increased. It's got one of the highest rates of water consumption on Earth. So that's the problem that they have. What's happening with climate change, ironically, has actually probably made it wetter. And you see things like the storms that they had there in April, where a huge amount of rain was dumped on the region in a very, very short space of time. So climate change is actually probably making the whole region wetter, or at least slightly more volatile, so you kind of get more wet periods and more dry periods. I think that, one of the things that came out of after those floods was that, it's not so much that climate change caused those floods or that, cloud seeding caused those floods. It was that the region was not equipped to deal with that level of rain. So a lot of it's about, like, the choices that countries make in terms of infrastructure. The UAE is a very affluent place. It's a place that's full of polo fields and golf courses and swimming pools and, lots of things that use a lot of water. And, it would be much more efficient for them to maybe be more efficient in their water use than it would be to try and squeeze water out of the
conservation
sky.
Sure, might also play a part. I mean, there's always been this idea years ago, we used to talk about the water wars, those countries that had water would be able to sell it. Obviously, we're hoping those of us listening from the west of Ireland in particular will be saying this could be a war we might welcome. But in terms of these countries, they'll have to do something. I just hope that they're not going to put all their resources into these sort of almost unproven technologies while neglecting the other more, as you say, prosaic things like the desalinations and so on. So it sounds like from what you're saying, they're doing both, so that there is a bit of comfort in that.
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, it's an energy problem, right? There is enough water for everyone in the world, but 70% of it is seawater. So if you can solve the energy problem, then you don't really have a water problem anymore. But, that is very energy intensive. So then that maybe has a knock-on effect, right? If you're running your desalination plant with, fossil fuels, then you're just sort of kicking the problem further down the road.
Okay, well, listen, well done on the lasers. I hope you got your passport back at the end of the whole trip.
I did, yeah.
It must have been quite bizarre when you go back to the airport and you just ordered a bottle of water. It seems so convenient, but other countries struggling to get it. Very much a trip worth taking, even if the water didn't come out of the sky on the particular day you visited. A good read, nevertheless. Amit Karwala, who is a writer and editor at Wired, thank you very much for talking to us through about cloud seeding and manufacturing the rain. We don't have that problem here. We've got a very good and slick manufacturing operation already. And thank you for coming and talking to us on Taking Stock.
Thank you so much.
And that indeed is it for this episode of Taking Stock. Just a reminder that while we broadcast at this time on Sunday mornings, we're also, of course, available as a podcast first from Friday mornings on the News Talk app. And also thanks to our producer, the effervescent John Fardy, Simon Keane and Stephen Daunt were on research, and Hugo De Silva was on the sound. Any comment on today's items, you, of course, can email us at takingstock@newstalk.com. Anton is up next with all your Sunday newspapers and lots more. But for now, from Taking Stock with me, Emmett Oliver, thanks for listening. Enjoy the rest of the day.